Go ahead and call the Senate Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order for March 15th. Now, on our agenda today is the Senate File 2321, and what we will do, we had a walkthrough on Tuesday of all of the provisions in it, and today what we'll be doing is tackling the amendments to the A3 amendment, and with that, let's see, we'll take Senate File 2321 off the table.
Question.
You have to have a quorum. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, will this bill then go to full finance if we act on it favorably here? It's not just, it does have, I mean, I'm seeing a sheet here, it does have fiscal impact. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Rest.
Thank you.
Okay, a quorum is present. We will take Senate File 2321 off the table, and I will start by offering the A3 amendment, and this is a delete everything amendment. Members, what this A3 amendment does is incorporates the additional bills that we covered on Tuesday that were rolled into this bill, and the Senate Council has incorporated all of those bills into this A3 amendment, and we'll move forward with amendments to that today. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, were there any bills that we heard that were to be considered that did not go into your amendment?
That's a good question.
Did every bill that we heard go in here, or were there some that you decided to pass over?
Yes, Senator Rest, based on the motion, during the committee hearing on particular bills, some of them went on their own, and others were, of course, incorporated, but based off of the motions and previous actions of the committee, some of the bills that we did hear in committee are not in here, but are moving by themselves.
But, Mr. Chairman, so every bill we heard was acted upon favorably, either going on by itself or included in your omnibus bill. Is that correct? I'm just trying
Senator
to...
Senator Rest, there is one bill that is not in here, that I'm being told, and that is Senator Miller's interstate commerce bill with farm trucks pulling into ports. And that relationship there, we're still waiting for some information on the issues surrounding federal
aid. It didn't
that's
go on its own, and it's not in here.
Right.
Okay, just yep. Just checking.
Thank you, Senator Rest.
Mm-hmm.
That's moving on its own. Very good. Okay, we've heard all of the provisions on this bill. We do have a fiscal summary as the bill stands right now, and what we will do is open up the floor for amendments to the let's go ahead and move Senate File 2321, the A3 delete everything amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and now we have the A3 amendment before us, and we'll open up the committee for amendments to the A3 amendment. Senator Dibble.
I'll start with maybe an easy one, Mr. Chair. I'm offering this amendment, the A4 amendment, on behalf of Senator Sharon, and I think she spoke with you about this already.
She did.
While the amendment is coming around, and I don't know if anyone is here in the audience to speak to this, but it has to do with exempting sales tax for federally qualified health care centers on their purchase of mobile medical units for the provision of medical or dental services. As defined on, well, it's in some technical language. I understand that if folks have questions, there would be someone here. I don't know if that's actually the case. But it basically provides a sales tax exemption for, and this has to do with community clinics, particularly in greater Minnesota, who are buying ambulances and retrofitting them to become mobile health clinics to provide some minimal health care needs and dental services around Minnesota.
And I understand also that their smaller RVs are being used for this purpose, and yeah, it's an excellent outreach. And for my part, I support this amendment. And is there anybody here to testify? Okay. Any questions on the part of the committee?
Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Because I'm a one Minnesota senator, this is a benefit for greater Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. We appreciate that out in greater Minnesota. Any discussion? All those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Chair?
Senator DeCryf.
I would like to offer the A9 amendment.
The A9 amendment to the amendment, Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A9 amendment speaks to the Senate File 1661 that Senator Chamberlain brought forward. And this amendment deals with committee and MnDOT consensus in regards to payments to Circle Pines for bonds for the July 17, 2008 certification. This amendment clearly identifies this particular situation, and I think it talks about a second payment in subsection 2 and subsection 4 where references non-eligible cities and allows for payments to Circle Pines under certification agreement without requiring payments of Minnesota street aid funds.
Thank you, Senator DeCryf. And is the senator here? Mm-hmm. Senator Chamberlain? Welcome to the committee, Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I understand you've done some good work here and got some agreement that with all the parties that this is the path we want to go down here, and we won't be setting any type of precedents with this amendment.
Mr. Chair, that was the goal I spoke to. We got the Bonnie Council drafted it yesterday, and we sent it over to Jonas, the DOT, Mr. Jonas, the DOT, and shared it with the other persons concerned. And our hope was to satisfy the concerns previously when we heard it was an issue of establishing a precedent, and the language that was in the bill would not allow for the payment of these funds for these bonds if they weren't eligible for MSA. So what this does is it clearly identifies Circle Pines in this particular instance, and then for the second part says that if the city is not eligible for MSA, they can still get these payments for the bonds. So at 2014, when the city stops getting the payments for the off-ramp for the city that dropped below 5,000, after 2014 and until the bonds are paid off in 2021 or 24, I can't remember the date, the year, the DOT is allowed to or required to make payments for those to the city so the city can pay those bonds. But at the same time, it says the city is not required, the DOT is not required to make the MSA payments. And that was a concern I spoke to that Mr. Jonas had when I spoke to him, I think it was yesterday. So they wouldn't have to be required to make the MSA as well as those other things. So we hope we separated those and clearly identified the situation not to establish a precedent.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Chamberlain. makes sense. Mr. Chair, I was wondering, though, if we could just hear from MnDOT themselves as well.
We're just going to call up Mr. Jonas.
Yeah, I see
Mr. Jonas here.
Peterson is here.
Mr. Peterson. Oh. Excellent.
I'm sorry, was Chair. Mr. Jonas.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
I recall the concern on the part of the committee was that we wouldn't cause a lot of cities who are just on the brink to rush in and start bonding against their MSA anticipated proceeds. Just want to be sure that's not going to happen with this language.
That's what the goal was, Senator Dibble, and we'll have that confirmed by Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT Government Affairs. And Senator Dibble, my understanding from Mr. Jonas is that this language does work out, prevents the situation that you described of future cities kind of trying to make themselves available for a similar type benefit, and it does address the previous concern about how to actually make sure that they're eligible to receive these payments into the future till the bonds are paid off.
Just a little clarification, as we've had this discussion, you know, in the halls in my office and trying to work through this, was this a contractual agreement then between the city and MnDOT in some way, shape, or form that has created this situation? And is that typical in other communities?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Chamberlain?
That was, I believe, between Circle Pines and DOT, that was part of the debate. And some would say it was an agreement. Some say it would not. It's not clearly stated. And DOT can speak to this as well. But the belief is, in the end, there's a detrimental reliance. And we don't want the city to or any cities to continue, as we had said, you know, setting themselves up to get this sort of payment. But there was a reliance on that. And it's 10% of the Circle Pines budget. So it's fairly substantial.
Sure.
So it was a big concern to them. But, there's a little disagreement on whether it was a contract or implied or one thing or another.
Okay. Thank you for that, Senator Chamberlain. But through this process, I'm assuming that we've learned something. And as we go forward, we will, with future agreements with all of our cities, that we will be able to avoid this type of a situation again in the future. Can I assume that?
Mr. Chairman, from our perspective, I think we'll be vigilant for the potential for these situations to reoccur. Yes.
I love that word, vigilant. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Any further discussion on the part of the committee? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Senator Cruz, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This amendment was actually brought to me by the Minnesota Professional Towing Association. It's simply just some reviser's instruction. It doesn't actually change any statute other than the order. They wanted to have some of this redone so that it was easier for them to find things in statute.
Okay, thank you, Senator Cruz. And I do remember the discussion now about this amendment. Provisions are in so many different places within our statutes that this is just an attempt to bring that all together so that these towing professionals know where to go to get the information they need to comply with the law. So,
yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And this was also added to the House bill last night.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Cruz. Any discussion? Senator Dibble.
Sure, I don't know. This looks like a sneaky... We hear from counsel on this. I'm just kidding.
Just because it looks like a conspiracy doesn't mean that it necessarily is. There,
sometimes paranoiacs have enemies, Mr. Chair.
Would you like some input on the
nope.
part of counsel?
Nope.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the A6 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A7 amendment. Mr. Chair, when you're ready, I need to make an oral amendment to the amendment.
Okay, Senator Wolf, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to make an oral amendment on 1.22. Strike that entire line.
Is that the extent of the
amendment? Yep, the oral amendment to the amendment.
Senator Wolf offers the oral amendment on line 1.22 to the A7.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, except leave the letter B.
Except. Senator Wolf offers the oral amendment to A7 on line 1.22, strike all the language following the B. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. To the amendment, Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two parts to this amendment. First part has to do with allowing bikes to have a flashing white lamp on the front of the bike. Currently, they have to have a solid white lamp. This would allow them to use a flashing white lamp. The law simply states they need to be visible from 500 feet, and this would still allow them to be visible, but it would be allowed to be a flashing white light instead of a solid light. And the second part has to do with tires being equipped with studs, which would increase the safety for bicycle riding in the snow.
Mr. Chair.
Senator DeCraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Wolf, are you aware, Senator Wolf, that studded snow tires have been outlawed in Minnesota for a number of years?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair.
Senator Wolf.
And if you would like to see the, this would be just for bicycles. I'm not changing anything for cars or anything else. And I don't know if you would like to see the extent of the size of the stud. It would be about the size of the tip of your pen. But we have an example if you'd like to see it.
That's fine, Senator Wolf, I think. We need to see the size of the stud.
In the room.
You couldn't resist.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Dibble. I'm grateful for this amendment. I didn't realize I was breaking the law every time that I ride my bike around Minneapolis at night. My front light flashes. So I'm glad I won't have to carry around that get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah. Very good.
And, happy to support the amendment from the newest member of our caucus, I understand. Senator Wolf was identified as member of our caucus in the Pioneer Press.
No. We didn't know, Senator Wolf. Had I only known that, the last caucus meeting.
Is that a wolf in sheep's clothing? Is that a wolf? Oh. I couldn't pass it off.
Anybody in the audience that wishes to speak for or against the amendment? None. Any further discussion? Thank goodness. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Any other? Oh, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I offer the A10 amendment.
Congratulations.
I would offer a oral amendment to the amendment. At line 1.12, after the words standards, insert best practices and best practices.
Senator Hall offers the oral amendment to the A10 amendment. On line 1.12, after the word standards, add the words and best practices. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. To the amendment, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This just is something we discussed earlier that we had to do a little bit further work on. And you can see there the discussion was about concrete diamond grinding and saw slurry associated with the construction, improvement, or repair of a road when deposited on the road project site in a manner that's in compliance with the general standards and best practices for waters under the state, under the rules of the agency. This is the discussion we had about putting the diamond grinding and the slurry on the in slope of the roads.
Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I understand that both PCA and MnDOT and industry agree that this is a desirable compromise.
Yeah.
Could we perhaps receive confirmation for the record from representative of either of the agencies?
I know Mr. Peterson
either
is here, maybe MPCA, if there's somebody here to talk about this. But, yeah, Senator Peterson presented the bill in the Environment Committee, and this was a negotiated language to assist in making the bill palatable by all parties. So, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Scott Peterson, MnDOT Office of Government Affairs, and Senator Dibble. Yeah, we've been working very feverishly with the folks representing the industry and the PCA to come up with language that makes everyone feel comfortable with alternative methods for disposing of this saw slurry. And I think that this language actually gets us there. And it's my understanding that the PCA agrees with this language as well.
Thank you. Mr. Bagnoli, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, Joe Bagnoli, on behalf of the Concrete Paving Association of Minnesota, I would just echo what Mr. Peterson has said. We've been working closely with MnDOT and PCA on this language, and this is what the PCA and MnDOT have sent over and suggested is what they want. So, and we've agreed.
This is good work on the part of Senator Peterson and MnDOT and MPCA. It'll go a long ways to reducing the cost of this operation and the productivity that they have while they're on these operations, and should it be signed into law, we'll see a lot of additional capacity to do this type of work going forward. So appreciate your hard work and Senator Peterson's on this provision. Any further discussion on part of the committee? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Next amendment. I've got one, but I don't know where it is. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Find the section. I have an amendment, but it would be to substitute for other language. So the amendment is actually in the form of bill language. It's upper right-hand corner 12-5490. And this is the distance pace fare surcharge. idea that we haven't actually heard about yet in this committee. It seems to be get to some of the concerns that were articulated with the fare increase discussion that we had a couple of days ago that got my attention. And Mr. Chair, I know that the opt-out communities, and actually this is drawn only to the opt-out communities are in favor of this idea, and we talked about, and you talked about as you presented the bill, the benefit to the fare increase to the opt-out community, something that they're seeking. I know that since that time in my conversation with Mr. Shetnin, they're interested in pursuing this. They've had this idea around for quite some time, and so they would like the opportunity to participate in a fare-based or distance-based fare pilot. And so, Mr. Chair, I would like to offer for the committee's consideration deleting the 25-cent fare increase that your bill, which is incorporated, I think, in here somewhere. I know I saw it. I just can't find it right now. And substitute this language, the 12-54-90, with the understanding, as happened, I know we don't speak with the other body, but Senator Cruz set the precedent. This is what they did last night as they marked up their omnibus transportation policy bill. There was a little testimony from the opt-outs and Met Council, their agreement that this is a good way to proceed, and some agreement that they would work on some language to bring the Met Council in as well.
Well, Senator Dibble, does the language, I don't see where it actually deletes the provisions for the fare increase in the bill. Is it in there?
No, Mr. Chair. That would just be the motion that I made.
Oh, okay. Our adept counsel has it ready to go, the language that would delete those sections, I assume, and replace it with this language. Let's move the A5490 amendment. Council wants us to substitute that for the A11 amendment. So if we just make that would be the A11 amendment.
Okay. We'll just call this the A11 amendment.
And we'll have Ms. Berzovsky explain the A11 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, I think we would just substitute this for Section 54. So the motion would be to delete Section 54 and insert, and it would be called Section 54 in the bill.
And Mr. Chair,
it would have to go later.
And that's my motion.
Would have to go later in the bill. I'll find the correct page and line.
In the meantime, Mr. Chair, Mr. Shetnin is moving through the room towards the table. So if we could hear from the Met Council.
Beyond the Met Council, is there somebody here from the suburban transit providers, the opt-outs? Don't see anybody. We would sure like to hear from them, too. Mr. Shetnin, welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetnin. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. To speak to the amendment, the council supports the amendment. We did have this conversation last night. Mr. Clark from the suburban transit providers participated in the testimony on this bill as well. The pilot distance-based fare program is an amendment that they brought forward, and that is the same language that Senator Dibble has right now. It is a project that will allow the opt-out providers to have a distance-based fare if they would like to do it for any type of route that extends beyond 15 miles. I know we've had this conversation in the past. The council is interested in participating in that as well, but the way that the amendment is written right now, there are some issues with how we would prorate the fares and a few other technical issues in the bill. So I'd like to let the committee know that We do support the concept, and we made the commitment last night to Chair Beard and to the opt-out providers that we will work on some language that will work for all of us. So in the meantime, we will get that language to you. Since this just came up last night, we're still trying to work out the technical pieces of it, but we would like the committee to support the bill or the amendment.
Mr. Shetnan, are they significant changes to the bill that would be something that would be of concern to the rest of the committee should this be added to the bill and move forward?
Mr. Chair and members, if the amendment includes the deletion of Section 54 as it stands right now, we would be fine with the bill moving forward with the pilot program language.
So,
Senator Dibble?
I don't think Mr. Shetnan quite understood your question. The language that would need to go in to this
right,
on this amendment
proposal
would
Mr.
be
Mr.
minor. It would simply bring in the Met Council into this pilot.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. What we need to do is add the Metropolitan Council to the language, but then also the language that deals with the potential of the prorated fares. We need to figure out how that works because we can't do that on a provider-by-provider basis right now. We have a regional system where you're able to take one system through another and pay that one fare, so we can't have a different charge for a different provider at that point. And that's where Mr. Clark and I are going to work with our technical people to figure out how exactly how to do this pilot program. But I can assure you we will come to an agreement on that.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
This distance-based fare idea has been around for, and it's the point you brought up yesterday or 2 days ago. And it's been around for quite a while. But no one's quite picked it up to really look at it and pursue it. And this is similar to the postage stamp concept. You know, it costs 45 cents to get a stamp from here, a letter from here to Los Angeles, as it does to get it from here in two blocks, and that doesn't make sense to a lot of folks. The fact that we can, you know, maybe take a look at the market and the level of service, the level of subsidy, even though I get anxious about that subsidy conversation. But it helps address some of those subsidy issues that you raised in the context of that presentation a couple of days ago. You can see some of the considerations that will be made in the report to the legislature as a function of the pilot program.
Senator Steven?
Chair, Mr. Shetnan, is it your understanding or do you think that this would be used for new routes or for existing routes?
Mr. Chair, sure. Senator Sieben, I believe it would be applied to existing express routes that are run in length of 15 miles or longer. And so that is one of the reasons why the opt-out providers are pursuing this language, because they serve areas, from Chanhassen, Chaska, Apple Valley, routes that are you're running real long routes that they would like to be able to charge an additional fare because they're running a longer trip. The Metropolitan Council, we run routes from Lakeville, from Blaine, other areas, Cottage Grove, say that have longer trips as well. I believe that once we worked out how this would apply, it would apply to those express trips of 15 miles or longer of existing trips because we're not adding a whole lot of service.
And
at this
Mr.
point.
Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Shetnan, is it your understanding that it would apply to all of those routes that you just specified, any that are greater than 15 miles?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, that is some of the technical things that we need to work out. We would have to work that out with the opt-outs as well, depending on how they would like that to apply. What we have right now is the regional fare system, again, so we have to figure out how this works comprehensively for all of the providers that are going to pursue this pilot project. So that's, Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, that is just some of the work that needs to be conducted here. And what I'm saying is I believe that we will be able to find that. It shouldn't take us more than a day or two to figure that out. But we just need a little bit of time to figure out how that works. We have to communicate to the opt-out providers what type of routes they are looking at, how it would apply to the routes that we provide. And I just don't have that overnight.
Sure.
Senator Dibble?
Are there no opt-out provider representatives here today?
We asked if there was somebody in the audience who didn't see anybody.
This is an initiative of theirs. I'm a little surprised we're doing omnibus bill markup here. I see this as a piece in the valley. You know, this kind of gets us a little bit away from whose money is whose in that struggle that we, you know, and whether or not we're generating enough money to support both sides. Not that there are different sides, but, you know, all aspects of the system. This, I think, takes the temperature down and improves the relationship between the suburban transit providers and Metro Transit quite a bit.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Would you be would you be open to tabling this for now until we see if we can get a call out to the opt-outs and maybe get them in here to give us a little input as far as their thoughts on this too?
Absolutely.
I just hate
to
kind of leave it.
I think that's wise.
Okay. We'll lay the A11 amendment on the table. And move on to other amendments, and hopefully we'll get the input we need.
I'll go tracking it up.
Mr. Shetman, thank you.
No, it's not. I see it.
I have the A8 amendment. I'm going to have Ms. Lynch with Medica come testify our table and talk to us about the A8 amendment. I know it's a good thing, but I just want the members to be clear. I'm sorry, this isn't Ms. Lynch. You could identify yourself for the record, please. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Barsh. I represent Medica. I'm not Ms. Lynch, but thank you for allowing me to speak briefly. The amendment before you is really a technical change in the statute. The law requires that certain rules developed by the Department of Transportation are to apply to non-emergency common carrier vehicles for the Medicaid program, as well as special transportation carriers. Unfortunately, as the rules were developed by the Department of Transportation, they were only written to apply to special transportation vendors. And so we're simply trying to remove the requirement that they apply to the non-emergency common carriers as well. We've spoken with the Department of Human Services, the Department of Transportation, and the carriers, and everyone's comfortable with the language.
I remember the discussion on this. It seems it's a good amendment, folks. Let's vote for it. Just kidding. Any discussion on the part of the committee? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Any other amendments? Senator Dibble.
Right. Did you just make the last call for amendments, Mr. Chair?
I'm about to do that. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
hopefully
then,
we'll.
Mr. Chair, I would. Well, okay. So I got to give it a whirl here. I would move to delete Section 4, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble, I'm sorry, I was a bit distracted.
Yeah, no, that's
by
fine.
Some
that's
other,
fine. I understand. So, Mr. Chair, I just moved to delete Section 4.
Well,
I have a couple more.
They just put this on hold.
Senator Dibble, to that amendment, your justification for doing such a radical thing, Mr. Chair.
I have a speech number 22 right here.
There you go. Senator Dibble.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I mean, we've been around this issue quite a bit in this committee and spent a little bit of time on it on the floor related to some other agencies a couple of days ago. I think, Mr. Chair, you've compiled mostly a pretty good bill here with a couple of exceptions. Would love to vote for the bill on its way out of this committee. This provision is one that wouldn't allow us or allow me to vote for the bill For the reasons that we've discussed earlier, I just simply think that the solution to the dilemma that faced us last year was fairly easy to address, and it was, comes down to the word that I keep bringing up, and that's the word compromise. Willing partners among legislators to come to a compromise legislative proposal, working in conjunction with the executive branch and the governor to come up with a compromise on an overall budget framework for all areas of state government. And then we wouldn't need to simply hand power to those who have no interest in resolving our budget dilemmas when we come into those inevitably every 2 years as we establish the state's budget.
Well, I appreciate the continuation of this discussion, and you know, I guess I voiced my concerns at the time I presented the bill, and it is moving separately. It's on the Senate floor at this time. Which I am very, very concerned about the additional cost to our trunk highway fund and to our contractors, and the having 25,000 employees out of work that were working on contracts that we agreed to and on projects that we knew 5 years ago what the funding was going to be and how much it was going to be and what years we were going to take that funding out of. As far as our transportation plan, that's all good a job we do in the state of Minnesota of planning for transportation projects like these road projects, and you know, to halt them simply you know, as a tool in the negotiations of a general fund budget disagreement just doesn't seem to be a very proper thing to do, considering that all of the funding that's going into these projects is federal funding, which is dedicated, and state funding, which is also constitutionally dedicated. It's outside the realm of the discussion. You know, and Senator Dibble, you have to appreciate that the vast majority of these workers on these projects are very well paid. They're, for the most part, paid prevailing wage or union wages, which is in some cases greater than the prevailing wage scale. They're union workers, they're state workers that are impacted by this, and you know, a great constituency that those on your side of the aisle claim to be yours. I can't for the life of me understand why those 25,000 workers and with your again your team's continuous efforts to what you say is to protect those people from our side of the aisle, you would allow them to have to take a break in the middle of their construction season to stop their wages, stop their benefits, place their families in turmoil, and continue a senseless practice of shutting down these projects that are with dedicated funding. I just really would be hopeful that you could help me understand your justification for that continued practice in light of the arguments that I made that this is a general fund, that the budget shutdown was caused by a general fund disagreement, not, and that this was not a part of that.
Mr. Chair, What's senseless to me is simply handing leverage and you know, kind of all the power over to folks who are more interested in impasse, and not really making sure that we're all kind of hang together and we all absolutely the consequences of shutdown have very negative effects, very negative consequences, real people's lives, on workers' lives. So it is incumbent upon us. Our entire system of government was built on the idea of compromise. I now understand that the word compromise is a dirty word in some political quarters. Somehow compromises, you know, compromising on core values that are that come from a higher power, and therefore, you know, we're just going to go my way or the highway. And that's exactly what we saw last year. Compromise was a dirty word. Compromise after compromise after compromise was offered by the governor, absolutely flat-handed, rejected by the majority party in the legislature, driving us into a shutdown. And we do all of these contingency appropriation, all these lights-on bills. That means we actually, in the end, we cause greater harm to the good of the order and the good of the state and people's lives, because we never actually achieve the kind of compromise we need to accomplish in terms of developing the budget and finalizing it and getting on with the business of the state. So, you know, you raise real issues. They're legitimate, absolutely. And I didn't begrudge the Associated General Contractors and the Transportation Alliance being at the table. They're speaking up on behalf of their members, advocating in the manner in which, they're expected to do. But their testimony confirmed for me even more that our job, the legislature, is to get the work of the budget done, come to compromise, finish it up, and then get on with things. And I think the effect of, you know, Trunk Highway, general fund, there is some general fund in here, that's even less important of a distinction, because we see all these other bills coming through as well that have everything to do with general fund, real consequence in people's lives. There's no dispute there. But in the long term, for the good of the order, we're much better off. We come to a compromise, finish our work, get the budget bill signed.
One of the points that you made, you know, that we are all in this together, and you know, it seems to me though that what you are advocating is the continued use of 25,000 workers as pawns in a scheme. And I waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, wondering what we could do, you know, and between the time that we adjourned and the time that the end of June came, you know, trying to figure out how we could approach this, how we could implore the governor to sign it, how we could keep these people working. There were two things that were extremely troubling to me, and one of them was that the people who said that they represent these 25,000 workers were no place to be seen in this discussion. You know, they didn't come to our help or to our aid to keep these people working in any way, shape, or form. You referenced ACG and the engineers and the others that did and actually tried to make the case right to the district court, to Judge Guerin, to try to keep these people working. The passion should be on the rule of law, in my opinion, and the constitutionally dedicated funding is the rule of law in this case. And beyond that, I think, in my opinion, as I struggled with this whole process that we went through, the people, the 25,000 construction workers and others that were, and suppliers and everybody else that was involved in this, became pawns. And I didn't care whether it was a pawn for the governor or anybody else. They were still pawns. And that is not acceptable to me in any way, shape, or form. But I got that off my chest, and I very much appreciate the accommodation of the committee, and I will call on Senator Howe, I believe, was the first hand I saw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just add, you know, I'd served on the Conference Committee for Transportation, and it wouldn't have mattered what we did in the Conference Committee. This transportation bill was just being used as a pawn, and it's more than just the workers. It's the residents of the state of Minnesota, and it's the safety of the residents of the state of Minnesota. And, you know, look at what you do in your personal life when it comes to probate or estate planning or anything. Do you want to just sit there and have to hammer it out or put in place a procedure that minimizes this and doesn't allow people to use leverage points? You know, I think the more we can do and have a order to it and take transportation out of that, because we are just about all dedicated funds here. We should not have, not that we shouldn't participate in the discussion, but we certainly shouldn't have been used as a pawn in the negotiating process. And it would not have mattered what we did on the conference committee. Transportation was not getting signed until the rest of the bills got signed. And so to the extent that we can prevent that from happening again, I support that.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was going to talk about what you talked about the constitutionality of transportation, how critical it is, and how we should have gone forward. And, you know, I've really thought through this. Nobody likes to have gone through what we went through. I've actually been in two government shutdowns. And to me, it's a tale of two administrations. When you look at, you know, what are we going to do to find compromise in the first one, the very first one I was part of, the compromise was finding all the areas that we could agree on, wrap those up, and that was over 70% of the entire budget package. Not very many people remember, because they weren't impacted. The decision of this most recent administration was really almost all or nothing, and that is not how you compromise. You compromise by finding the places that you have agreement, take those first, and then work on the bigger issues. And our goal should be going forward that we do not impact the people where they should not be impacted. We need to put pressure on ourselves and the governor, certainly, but as far as other people, the constituents of Minnesota, they do not deserve it. They deserve better than that. And so many of these bills coming forward, the one you have, I have a freedom to hunt and fish. I know Senator DeKreif has various ones, Racing Commission, etc. That's smart, and I appreciate, Senator, what you were talking about related to estate planning. You know, I work on one side of that, and you plan ahead for things you hope won't happen and things you know will happen. But either way, you set a plan in place, and so that's what we're trying to do, and I thank you for bringing this one forward. I'll just make one more comment. I had a major private contractor, many union employees up in the Brainerd area, just so frustrated that they couldn't move forward because we decided that we were going to make this a piece of the puzzle, the chess game, the pawn piece that they were, and it shouldn't have happened. Thank you.
Okay, a roll call has been requested on this motion. A roll call will be taken. And the motion is to delete Section 4, which is the MnDOT construction project contingent appropriation. I think we all know what we're at.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator Howell?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator DeKreif?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Koch? Senator Cruz?
No.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
No.
Senator Reinhart?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
Yes.
Senator Sharon? Senator Sieben?
No.
Senator Wolf?
No.
There being eight no's and five yeses, the motion does not prevail. I think what we will send it to.
I just need to try another one. Hopefully it'll go quickly.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move to delete Section 33 from the bill. Starts at the bottom of page 23, but it's actually at the top of page 24. And this is the piece that Senator Hall brought forward in memory of Senator Day. Speed limit on 35E adjacent to downtown St. Paul. I know that St. Paul folks were notified that this was going to be in the omnibus. I don't know if anyone is here from St. Paul. But we did hear from, that was interesting. People not showing up for the bill. Well, we'll give it a try. We heard fairly complete testimony from MnDOT about how if this were to pass into law, MnDOT would be forced, would be in a dilemma, two legal requirements that were in contradiction to each other. They would be impossible for them to comply with one and not the other, and vice versa, because, of course, we know that the speed limit on 35E is a function of a court order, a longstanding contractual agreement, and a function of the environmental impact statement, and there's implication for the federal highway dollars that were used to build that freeway in the first place. And so some exposure, some significant fiscal exposure potentially to the state. So for those reasons, Senator Hall's bill, while understandable, is inadvisable.
I'm sure you don't. I don't know.
Any other discussion on this?
Mr. Chair, where was that again, Senator?
Senator Perry, the new language, Senator Hall's language, starts at the top of page 24, the A3 amendment.
Any further discussion? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if we can't have MnDOT speak to this issue just one more time and share with us what the likely outcome would be.
Mr. Peterson. One more time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Howe. As Senator Dibble stated, if this becomes law, this does put the department in a kind of a difficult situation in having two legal requirements that are in direct conflict. The court-sanctioned agreement that allowed the 35E interstate to be built in St. Paul specifies a 45-mile-an-hour maximum speed limit. That speed limit was also incorporated into the environmental impact statement, which, then identified that route as the preferred alternative, which is a formal designation that allows the interstate to be constructed. If the speed limit then becomes 50, then there's some doubt as to whether that environmental impact statement continues to be valid. We suspect we would have to open that up again for reexamination. It's my understanding that, as far as we can tell, there was somewhere between $35 and $40 million worth of federal funds that were used to construct that segment of 35E. And since FHWA, which is the federal agency from which we get our federal funds, we are unsure what action they might take. But one of the things that they do have at their disposal is to withhold that amount of money from future federal aid distributions, because now we're in violation of the federal requirements for receipt of the money. And so those are basically the primary sources of our concern about this particular provision. There's also, I think, a reasonably high probability that then we would be subject to lawsuits were we to comply with the provision in this bill and increase the speed limits to 50, lawsuits from the neighborhood group that was pressing the case against the department at the time this highway improvement was being proposed.
I got a question.
Senator Hall.
So I thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question for Mr. Peterson would be, can you tell me, is there a process for asking for a waiver on that or going through that process? And, you know, this issue has been around a long time, and I'm just wondering, maybe we could also have the State Patrol testify to the enforcement in that area, too. But we're talking about, is it 45 now? We're talking about 5 miles an hour?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howe, that's correct. Yeah, 5 miles an hour.
Mr. Peterson.
And I'd like to ask the State Patrol if they issue tickets in that area at 50 miles an hour. But is there a process for asking for a waiver on this?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Peterson.
Senator Howe, the only process that's available to us, as far as I know, is to go back to the parties of the original agreement and ask to reopen the agreement to modify the terms.
Thank you.
Major Urquhart?
Mr. Chairman, Ken Urquhart, Major with the State Patrol. I can tell you this, our East Metro Patrol District consistently gets calls from those folks in that neighborhood about trucks using that roadway and the speed on that roadway. So they consistently request that we are active in conducting enforcement on that stretch of highway. So we do hear from them.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
My question, Major, it would be, do you issue tickets at 50 miles an hour for that area? I mean, how many tickets could you provide that to this committee? How many tickets do you reasonably expect are issued at 50 miles an hour or under in that stretch of roadway?
Major Urquhart.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, from my experience, the bulk of the traffic is traveling much faster than the speed limit on that road. And I know the city also works that road quite aggressively, the city of St. Paul with their traffic unit. I would have to do some research with the East Metro District to determine what citations are being written there specifically. But I used to commute that road every day to my office in Mendota Heights, and those people are driving much faster than 45 miles an hour.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hall.
I'm starting to think I'm asking a politician here. The question is do we reasonably expect someone to get a ticket driving 50 miles an hour? I mean, that's my question. If you're going 5 miles, the issue here is taking it from 45 to 50. Am I at great risk going 50 miles an hour down that road today of getting pulled over by the Minnesota State Patrol?
Good luck, Senator Hall.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, in my opinion, no.
Thank you.
Mr. Okay. Chair.
Senator Perry.
That's because he knows he's got to get out of jail card.
I had to add to it.
Senator Dibble, did you have a comment? You look like...
No, I was flicking my hair.
Very good.
No, Mr. I think the points have been well made. I know that St. Paul was intending to be here to represent their perspective, but it looks like they're not going to make it.
Senator Dibble, would you repeat your motion for us?
Mr. Chair, my motion is to delete Section 33 from the A3 amendment.
Senator Dibble moves that we delete Section 33 of the amendment of the A3 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail.
Division.
Division has been requested. All those in favor of the motion to delete Section 33 signify by raising their hand. Okay. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Okay, we do have the A11 amendment, Senator Dibble's A11 amendment, and I see that the suburban transit providers, the opt-outs, a representative here now that can fill us in on this amendment from your perspective. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Sherry Munyon, and I'm here representing the Suburban Transit Association, and we are very supportive of the demonstration project for distance-based fares on behalf of the users of the system. We think that they are receiving a good value. We've been in conversation with the Metropolitan Council. We understand that a little bit of tweaking still needs to be done to make this provision workable, and we will continue to work with them to get it in shape.
Okay, and you're comfortable that if we go ahead and pass this and move it on, that you'll be able to accomplish that with the Met Council?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we are comfortable that that will happen.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion on the Senator Sieben?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to express some more concern about not the suburban opt-out provision, but transferring this so-called pilot program to the express routes that the Met Council serves. I know that there's a fare increase already in the bill, so this would be replacing that. But I'm just concerned that there have been rather significant cuts to some suburban areas that aren't served by the suburban opt-outs by Met Transit, and I don't want it to be the case where it's only the suburban areas that are served by Met Transit that are seeing a significantly, perhaps, or significantly higher fare. So essentially what it looks to me that's happening, and someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but we're getting rid of the overall fare increase, instead pushing the fare increase out to just the suburban areas that, as far as Met Transit goes, they've already seen significant, or some could say significant, route decreases as a result of last year's budget cuts that became law.
Senator Dibble?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I understand Senator Stevens' concern, and I share it. And would like at least a nod from Met Council and the suburban transit providers that we could, that there's equity in this proposal. We're not inappropriately impacting one region or one part of the system or one set of users. I'll also just make note of the fact that there is a significant reverse commute that occurs on Met Council buses and express bus, you know, that people closer in use to get out to the employment centers and campuses distributed around the metropolitan area. That's become more significant in recent years as we've seen those work centers and industrial campuses developing. So I'm pretty sure there'll be some broad, I'm seeing nodding. Some of this idea will be shared broadly, I'm sure.
Senator Stephen?
I have a question for Ms. Munyon. Ms. Munyon, did the suburban opt-outs see route reductions take place as a result of the budget that was passed last year?
Ms. Munyon?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stephen, I don't have a specific answer as to which services. I know there have been some changes in service over the past couple of years.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd use that if you want to respond.
And when the opt-outs show up in force. Mr. Clark, welcome to the committee. You have a response,
Mr. Chair. James Clark with Messling and Kramer. Representing the Suburban Transit Association. There were service reductions due to the last year's budget situation, specifically with Southwest Transit. They had service reductions.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like that issue to be looked at by the Met Transit to see if there were proportional cuts, because it's my feeling that, or at least in the area that I represent, there were significant route reductions that were, I was told, a direct result of last year's budget. And I thought that the suburban opt-outs could rely on their budget reserves so they wouldn't have to make as many cuts. So that's my point with this compromise, is that some of the suburban areas have already made significant reductions and now are going to be asked to pay higher fares under this proposal and not necessarily get more service. So that's a point of concern.
Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, I think I heard Mr. Clark say that service reductions were made as a result of the suburban opt-outs having to use their budget reserves.
In one portion.
And I don't think that's actually true, Mr. Chair. Their budget reserves were in excess of anything that they would have needed for regular route operations for quite some time, and the only protest I ever heard from the suburban opt-outs. Now, we're here to make peace in the valley and find a mutually agreeable and not relive battles, but I just heard something that I just have to contest. You know, that the only complaint I heard was they were banking all this money for some future capital needs, and they weren't banking this money for their existing regular route service. And I have not heard, or it has not been reported to me, that any service reductions were made as a result of using those pretty extraordinary budget reserves that they were banking.
Well, the extraordinary budget reserves that in one person's eyes, especially if you have a comprehensive plan to extend services to and to move forward with the future of bus transportation out in your area, though, when you you don't really consider, I don't think, those dollars to be reserves when they're part of a plan moving forward. But I don't think the reserves were equal across the board. I think some of those reserves were larger, and some of the opt-out providers and others didn't have as much. And I think, and I guess Mr. Clark can probably talk to this, but all reserves are not equal out there. And maybe with the Met Council, all of their reserves are equal, but not out in these various suburban opt-out providers. I don't think that's the case. Mr. Clark? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble. Absolutely don't want to reopen last year. That wasn't my intent. I was trying to answer Senator Siebman's question, but Senator Gimsey, you are correct. Not all of the providers have the same reserve levels by any means, and so while some were able to absorb because they had larger reserves, there were some that do not have as large a reserve. That's the only point I was trying to make.
And so the committee understands, I am going to support this because we do seem to have an agreement between the Met Council and the suburban providers, and an understanding. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to be a very appropriate approach, along with the deletion of my very cherished Section 54. I'll go ahead and support that. And I don't know if that's going to change any committee members' need to be here for a vote or not, but I just wanted to open that possibility up if somebody had to go someplace. So, Senator Dibble.
Thanks. I'm done, Mr. Chair, so I'm ready to vote. I'm fully informed and ready to vote.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, now as more information becomes available, it just makes me more frustrated because I'm fine with the amendment as it's drafted right now, or if this is what the understanding that's going to move forward. I'm picking up that there's some agreement to now include Met Transit in increasing their fares as well for suburban ridership. I just think that that's not fair because Met Transit also, I understand, made some sort of agreement that they weren't going to increase fares as part of this other agreement, but yet now they're saying they're going to come forward and ask for an increase only on the suburban routes. So I think that this is disproportionately impacting the suburban ridership that all of us on the committee want to see increased. At least I know Senator Lilly and I were just chatting. We want to see more ridership in areas that aren't served by the suburban opt-outs. And so the impact of this, although perhaps not intended, is disproportionately affecting non-suburban Met Transit service. And I don't think that that's fair. And so I don't know if Mr. Chetnin wants to comment on this or if he has anything he can add to the discussion, but it seems that we should look for some other sort of solution here.
And this is Senator Stephen and members, this is a pilot program. They'll be reporting back to the chairs of the transportation committees on August 1st, and I believe the program expires January 1st of 2016. So we can.
Mr. Chair, and if it's your will to pass this, and I understand that's the case, but Mr. Chetnin did testify that it's Met Transit's intention to raise fares on all suburban Met Transit service.
That's a very legitimate question. We should maybe call Mr. Chetnin back to the table.
Mr. Chair, members, Mr. Senator Stephen, appreciate the opportunity to be back to discuss the amendment. What we have said is what we are doing right now. What the council is doing right now is looking at our fare structure moving forward. And one of the things in our transportation policy plan that we've talked about are looking at distance-based fares. The way the amendment reads right now is that there is a fare increase. The way the bill reads right now is that there's an across-the-board fare increase. The council does not support that. However, since the pilot project is something that the council is considering, and it's also something that our partners with the opt-out providers are interested in pursuing, we are saying that we will work with the language in order to work out some of the technical issues there and come up with a program that will work. I don't have all the details on how that is exactly going to work at this point, but we will come back with more detail for you. But it is something that the council will support at this point.
Senator Stephen?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Shettman, I would encourage and hope, perhaps you can say this, that you will take into account what service reductions have already taken place when you're looking at implementing the pilot program. Because the pilot program, it doesn't specify that it has to include any route that is over 15 miles.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Stephen, that is exactly the technical piece of the language that we need to work out. That's like I said, when this amendment came up last night and then through this morning, we just haven't had the opportunity to figure that out. But in the concept, that is something that we can support.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Stephen, I appreciate your comments and your concerns about that. We are concerned about service reductions and all of things related to our transit service. So we will keep that in mind, and I will certainly follow up with you on that.
Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, I'll make that same commitment to work with Senator Stephen as this bill gets into the bill, as this bill moves forward. Make sure that, you know, because there is the reverse commute issue too, like I said, and so, you know, there, you know, need to look at this holistically.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Oh, yeah. Prior to a vote on this, we will have staff, Ms. Berzovsky, go through the changes that we've made to make sure that everybody's clear what we've done to this. Ms. Berzovsky.
To the A11 amendment.
To the A11 amendment.
Mr. Chair, first, it will be prepared formally as the A11 amendment. The amendment is to delete Section 54, excuse me, on page 48, after line 28, insert the new language, and it will actually be Section 64. And then renumber the sections.
Okay, just prior to that, we have a citizen testifier that would like to come forward, and we'll give him a few minutes to discuss this. Mr. Rickmeyer.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
Peter Rickmeyer. I was here and testified on Tuesday. There was some discussions about fares and discounted fares, and there was some confusion, so I made sure that each and every committee member received information on how much fares are and the discounted fares are. There's a couple of things that I'd like to discuss. First of all, there's a way to add an extra 100,000 trips per year with an added 2 million miles of transit service, which is called reverse trips, as Senator Dibble mentioned. Anybody that's familiar with mass transit, when they go out on a trip, a lot of buses during rush hour, they head back, not in service. And my idea would be to have a one-stop reverse trip so they would only pick up at the last stop and they would drop off at the beginning of the next route. So those trips will be added. There will be absolutely no extra cost to taxpayers, which is a benefit to me and everyone else. And there's no added cost to the individual bus companies or Met Council, which is a benefit. And this is what I would call a art of compromise, where the Republicans don't want to increase the amount of money that's paid for programming, where the Democrats want more programming. And so the art of compromise would be adding the programming that the Democrats want at no cost, which the Republicans want. And so the I would just like to point that out. The last thing that I'd like to say is that, you know, in politics, perception is reality, but it's not necessarily the truth. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rickmeyer.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make an oral amendment to the A11.
That to your amendment?
That would be to strike Section 54, the deletion. And I think at that point, that would take the A11 and insert under Section 54 as subdivision 6, maybe? That works, Ms. Berzkowski.
Ms. Berzkowski? So to that amendment, what would be the intent?
Well, the intent would be to leave Section 54 intact and add the A11 amendment as would be inserted after line 3721 as a new subdivision, whatever that subdivision number would be.
And the impact, Senator Perry?
Well, I think a couple of things. I'm all for a pilot project. But most importantly, where I come from is how much will the citizens of the state subsidize ridership? How much do we let that subsidy go up as the fuel prices go up, as the cost goes up? And I think it's imprudent that, you know, we take a look at that. I mean, obviously, Mr. Chair, you wouldn't have put that section in to begin with without realizing that. And I think it really does. We haven't had any discussion on how much do we want the rest of the state of Minnesota to subsidize as gas prices go up. And I believe we need to be concerned about that.
I appreciate those concerns. And when I represented the bill that created the increase in the fares, it was with those thoughts in mind that in the future we will probably see greater and greater demands on our general fund. I also do, though, see that this is a way to move in that direction also. So, and that's why I'm supporting it. Maybe not as boldly, probably, as directing the Met Council to move forward with a fair increase. But and maybe we could call Mr. Shetland back up and to give us a sense of when, if this section was taken out, when we might expect that they will be reevaluating the fuel and the tires and all of the additional costs that have been going up and on their own possibly increasing fares, which a lot of us really do feel are quite low, and that a greater share could be paid through the fee structure. Mr. Shatner.
Mr. Chair and members, thanks again for the opportunity to speak to the amendment. The council is, as I mentioned in my testimony on Tuesday, that we are currently looking at, through our transportation committee, our fare structure, but also as we develop our budget proposal for the next biennial budget. I also mentioned that we will look at all potential revenue sources as potential sources to address our budget when we come to the legislature next year. And that hasn't changed, and we will be happy to have those conversations. I think to repeat the fact that our transportation committee is undertaking that right now is important, and it should be restated. So we are constantly in the position of looking at our budget. As you know, that we rely on the state's general fund and we rely on the motor vehicle sales tax, and that the motor vehicle sales tax fluctuates. Right now, it is swinging upward a little bit, which is fantastic, but we have to take all of those things into consideration. We talk about the price of fuel. The council purchases about 7 million gallons of fuel a year. So every time the I'm terrible at math, but if the every time the price of fuel goes up, it costs us an additional $700,000, if I have that right. The other piece is that we try to handle that by using energy forward pricing mechanisms, by buying contracts that expire or 18 months out. But eventually we end up having to pay the piper because every month those contracts expire and we have to enter into a new contract. So there is an impact on our budget as well when the price of fuel goes up.
Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. We will have a roll call. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I resist the amendment to my amendment, obviously. If we were to examine dollars for dollars, which form of transportation is subsidized to a greater degree, roads are subsidized to a greater degree by taxes of general application, property taxes, over $1 billion supports our transportation, our road system in Minnesota. The general fund supports our federal highway allocation. About 20% of that is general fund dollars. Government provides free parking all over the place. That's, you know, many millions of dollars. So, you know, there's this which form of transportation subsidy argument just simply doesn't wash. In the metropolitan area, we have a higher fare box recovery rate than most other metropolitan areas. It's just simply a fact. That means our transit systems are to be commended for that. That's a great thing in my opinion, but, you know, by some people's measure in this committee, that they think that's a good thing. So to that end, we have a higher fare box recovery rate than most other metropolitan areas. And, you know, we're changing, we're presuming our judgment for the Met Councils where we haven't done before. We're changing the budget arrangement kind of midstream. And, you know, folks in this metropolitan area, particularly those at the low end of the economic scale, pay more for transportation than they do for their housing in the form of bus fares, bus and transit fares. Mr. Chair, and, you know, we're talking about heaping a 15 to 20% increase on folks' transportation budgets. This is going to knock people out of their ability to get to work, get to the schools. 80% of all the transit use in the metropolitan area is to get to school or to get to work.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Senator Dibble, you talk as if those of us that don't ride the bus don't feel the impact. I don't know how you can get to that point. Every time the gas prices go up, we feel the impact, and we have to share in that burden. I'm just saying, when is enough enough? That's the discussion I think we need to have sooner or later about subsidizing transportation without, you know, I can't even, I don't know that I can trust that Met Council can work fast enough or would work fast enough to make adjustments. We just heard Mr. Shepman say when the fuel prices go up, it's another $700,000. And, you know, I'm concerned about that. And we never want to talk about that. How much is enough enough? How much does the rest of the state have to continually subsidize when movement isn't made this way?
Members, I know we've had this discussion in the past, and we are covering ground that we've been down before, and we are almost out of time for this committee hearing.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion request for roll call.
Senator Perry withdraws his request for a roll call, and we'll have Ms. Senator Dibble. Do you want to continue to speak? Thank you. Ms. Berezovsky, will you read the amendment that we will be voting on?
Mr. Chair, the amendment would be to it would remove the deletion of Section 54. So it would reinstate Section 54, and then following Section 54, following 37.22, we would insert Section 55, and it would provide that Section Minnesota Statute Section 473.408 is amended by adding a subdivision to read. And that would be subdivision 5B. That would be a new section in the bill. And then the language as follows, and renumber sections.
Okay. I think we have a handle on the Perry Amendment. All those in favor of the Perry Amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Division.
Division has been requested. All those in favor of the Perry motion, raise your right hand. Raise your hand. Okay. Those opposed, the motion does not prevail. Okay, and we have in front of us the A11 amendment. Ms. Berzovsky has read that amendment. We've had significant discussion on it now. All those in favor of the A11 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail. Now what we have before us is Senate File 2321 as amended. And I move that Senate File 2321 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, committee members. Good work this afternoon.